Disclaimer: the views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com, but you already knew that, didn't you? Enjoy the show. Welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Perchi. Justin's here as well.
Howdy.
And our guest this week is Sam Pinanski. He's been on the show before. We talked to him last year right after the quake. But he is a translator, producer, subtitle engineer who provides simulcasting materials for Nico Nico, Crunchyroll, Hulu, Funimation, Anime Network. Any place that you watch simulcasting anime, this guy's responsible for it. Sam, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Oh, I'm really happy to be here. So
that was a really long introduction. You wear many hats, and so I guess just so people understand what it is you do, give us an overview.
Sure. Maybe the simplest thing I could say is to say where I came from and how I got started, and actually where I'm working from now, to sort of give a sense of what I do overall for the industry at the moment. Basically, I'm sort of like a fix-it man here in Japan in terms of subtitles and simulcasts and getting things done. And I started off as a translator for MX Media. Actually, I believe you had the guy from that on your program a long time ago, which was one of the initial company that was doing translations for Crunchyroll back when they very, very started in the very beginning. My position, however, I was actually living in Japan at the time, and I sort of used it to get contacts directly with the Japanese industry, like MediaNet and Fuji Creative and TV and the other rights holders. And then I used that essentially to start getting work directly with them and have built that into a sort of my own little business where it's not just me anymore, but I actually work with a bunch of other translators and editors and timers and quality checkers to do quite a lot of the anime that is simulcast at the moment. So that's our specialty. We work very much on anime simulcasts and try and work within the constraints that you have from simulcast anime, which I'm sure Justin is fully aware, where you have very little time and you have to do things very quickly and on short notice. And also you have to deal with the various different formats and encoding. And also it's somewhat of an educational thing where you have to help the Japanese companies understand what's necessary and the new kinds of workflows that are needed to actually make these things work. So currently, actually, I work at Tezuka Productions, which is, yes, the Tezuka sensei, who, famous manga god, the god of manga. And actually, they provide me a really great position because they provide me a salary and a fixed contract job. And then I basically act as a freelance operative for them to go out and get work doing these simulcast translations, and it's been a really great home for me for the past couple of years. So basically what happens is I go to a rights holder, whether it's a television station or it's one of the U.S. companies like Crunchyroll or Nico Nico, which is actually half the Japanese company, say Dwango side, is actually who I deal with in Japan. And they're going to have an upcoming anime that they want to simulcast, and they need someone to produce the subtitles for it. Let's take Dwango, for example. Then I come to them with an offer, and they say, okay, well, you'll be the one who, the subcontractor, handles the subtitles. And then after that, I work very closely together with them, and also sometimes even directly the producers of the anime itself, to make sure that we get scripts and we get the video, and then I distribute them to the translator who I assigned to the show, or and the editor, and everybody else, the team. I essentially form a little team that does the show, and to make sure that every week or we actually get the show, we get the subtitles created, and then in the format that the broadcaster requests. In this case, it's different for NikoNiko.com or Crunchyroll or Funimation or Hulu, for example. Everybody has different needs. And then we make sure to just get it to them, as soon as they need it to actually get it online for the simulcast. So every contract is a little different and every client is a little different, but thankfully I'm able to adapt to pretty much anything that anybody in the industry needs at the moment, and that's why I've been able to build this sort of business. So that's a brief what I do, but it's sort of taken a long time to build up all the connections.
Yeah, so I kind of want to start from the beginning on that because, mm-hmm. you know, simulcasting didn't exist as a job, 5 years ago? This is new. So, when you started out, when you were, in college or whatever, what was your goal? Did you just want to get into the anime industry? And then how did you wind up where you're at?
Well, personal history, when I was in college, my goal was to figure out the ultimate theory of the universe and everything. Because when I was in school, I actually was studying theoretical physics. And then I went to the University of California, Santa Barbara for their string theory program, where I studied string theory for 5 years and got my PhD and wrote a thesis. Feel free to look for my thesis on the archive if people are interested. After I graduated with my PhD from Santa Barbara, I took a postdoc in Tokyo at the University of Tokyo, where I continued my research for 2 years. It was a 2-year postdoc with the Japanese Society for the Promotion of Science. And then after that postdoc was over, I sort of had a choice. I could go to another postdoc somewhere around the world, or I could, try and find something to stay in Japan. And I decided to stay in Japan, and I worked as a freelance, essentially just a freelance translator for about 2 months, 3 months. And at that point, I was looking for a serious contract because I needed a contract or I wouldn't be able to get a visa and continue to stay in Japan. So my boss at Tezuka, Shimizu-san, who is the general manager at Tezuka Productions, he came to me and I said, this is what I do. And he's actually, I don't know if you remember an article, I think it was 3 years ago, 4 years ago, where the Association of Japanese Animation Companies said something like there were 10, good fan servers out there and we need to take them and use them to spread anime around the world. Do you remember that article, Justin? Or Zach?
Yeah.
That's Shimizu-san. That was my boss. And he basically said, oh, this is one of the 10. And and he hired me, essentially, to go out and do good things to help the industry go global.
So you are his Pikachu, and he is collecting fan subbers like Pokemon.
Yes, actually. It's very much like that. I do feel sort of like he – I'm his trump car. I'm his, secret weapon that, he brings out to... actually, though, it's much more complicated than that. But in the beginning, though, that was sort of the real motivation for him was not to get some employee that was going to make Tezuka a ton of money or something like that, but actually just to support someone who was looking to modernize the industry a little bit and to be a tool that he wants to keep in Japan to just help everyone. And that's what I ended up doing, is really trying to help everyone, whether it's consulting or actually, doing the subtitling or just talking about what workflows and getting producers, just the little things like making sure that the final scripts, the kansei daihon, are created before the show actually airs instead of a couple weeks afterwards, right? Those are just little things that you could just tweak in the schedule, but, they're necessary to really have proper simulcast be possible.
So, simulcasting wasn't necessarily, actually, I believe it was a giant pain in the ass getting a lot of these companies to agree to it. It was like pulling teeth. Did you ever find yourself in the position of advocate?
Oh, yes, of course. I mean, I'm constantly in a advocate position, or in a position to advocate, I guess is the best way to say it. I'm not, however, of course, the licensor myself. Therefore, I'm actually even a better position to be an advocate because I'm somewhat neutral and as a third party. I find myself as sort of a explainer. So I have to I can explain the position of the Japanese company to the licensing company. I can explain the position of the licensing company to the Japanese company, the rights holders. And then And so that to hopefully get people to understand the other's positions, because I do sort of understand both the problems of the schedules and the fact that, you know, the producers are horribly busy, and it's not actually agreeing to simulcast is not all just because they're it's not as much as people think that the Japanese companies are worried about the foreigners seeing their anime too soon. It's actually just more logistics. It really is. Most of the delays that you'd have in anime simulcasts have to do with how difficult the logistics are to get the video ready and the materials ready to actually put online that soon. And it costs money. And people don't understand that how much that costs. And actually, that's what I've really been working on, is not advocating so much as coming up with the workflows that are necessary to get things done quickly, right? So that's the difference between what I would call just advocacy and say you should do this, and what I'm doing more is this is how you can do this, is what I sort of bring to the table, and that's what the difference, I think, in what I'm trying to say.
I actually go into quite a bit of this on the last installment of my column, which will go up the same day as this. But
oh, well, I actually was thinking that this would sort of link into your anime economy columns pretty well. So
yes, quite well.
I would be happy to answer some sort of much more specific technical questions if you're interested, in Justin. But
well, we can't get too technical on this show because we lose people. But if you could, like, briefly cliff notes.
I've been trying
for...
to avoid.
Yeah, if you could, like, briefly cliff notes for non-nerds, tell us a little bit about workflow before and workflow now, like what you've been advocating.
Well, there's a lot of the one thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is that today everything, especially for anime, everything is done on tape. It's still done on tape. So, for example, I'm sure you go into this in your article, but when an anime is finished and delivered to a TV station, it's delivered on HD cam, in a couple of situations, HD cam SR. And these tapes require very expensive editing suites and equipment that pretty much nobody in the anime industry owns, except for actual editing studios, because these tape decks, these HD cam decks, cost $50,000 new, and therefore
and used not much less than that.
You can find them for half price.
You really have to dig, though.
I found a used HD cam price in a store near the Mandarake and Nakano Broadway. Actually, it was kind of amusing. I was trying to convince someone to pick it up, and then it was gone the next week, and I was all sad. Anyway, inside baseball. Let's go on. So basically, to get the anime on the internet, you need to take that tape and turn it into a digital file. And that's not really a difficult thing to do, but you have to have this this editing suite. You have to have the tape deck. You have to have the playback, and you have to have the actual capture card. And these are, you know, professional level stuff or semi pro stuff is necessary to do this.
Yeah, so, you can't do this with a $400 laptop. You need like a $3,000 workstation or something.
Right. Yeah, and most importantly, you need the proper cabling, and you need the proper capture card, like a Kona 3 or something, right. Or you can get away with the Blackmagic, but or Black. No. So basically, the tape digitization is the first thing, which is an extra cost. And for a long time, when Crunchyroll started, their initial, encodes, if you recall, their initial video had problems with IVTC, inverse telesign. There are all kinds of issues where the tape, which is designed for Japanese broadcast television, is not the same video format as you'll need for doing things online. For example, a Japanese broadcast is NTSC. It's at 30 frames per second, whereas anime is usually made today at 24 frames per second. Therefore, the HD cam tapes are all telesigned. And you have to undo that telesign as part of one of the filters. And it's something actually fansubbers are very, very adept at doing, because they're constantly taking the TV broadcasts and reconverting them down. But it's something that the industry and the editing studios are very much not familiar with. And there was a large learning curve just in the very beginning about how to properly inverse telesign things. And that has essentially been had to be taught to every different editing studio that does final these digitizations, and they had to go around and say, okay, no, this is how you properly do this. You can't just, you know, blur every frame. You have to actually go through and do the proper gakutelesine. There's now a word in Japanese for that.
Cool.
and that's the kind of thing that you have to go around and actually educate people on in the industry. And also, there are some companies that have popped up actually just in the past 2 years whose entire job is just to digitize things from tape for the web. And this is not just for anime, but actually for a lot of other businesses that do live-action movies, even in Japan. There's whole sub-businesses which have to take things which are originally on tape and convert them to the web. And the anime digitization industry and the had sort of grew up with the rest of the industry over the past 3 years. And thankfully, there's been a number of other cheap options for doing digitization manually. So even though I never had access to an HD cam deck myself, I could bring a tape with me to sort of like a 24-hour walk-up editing studio and say, here, please digitize this tape onto this hard disk, and, you know, costs about $100 per hour. Per hour of material, and now that's a lot. That's actually a lot of money. The digitization can cost almost as much as the translation itself, and that money has to be paid essentially by the Japanese company. So they might go in their negotiations in the beginning. Well, why are we have to, you know, why do we have to do this when we're not going to make any money, and we have to pay an extra $100 an episode just to get you some digital file that you need, and so the digitization becomes another issue involved in getting the simulcast working. And then there's the scheduling and security. So the final editing studio has the tape, and usually what they do is they create the tape. They create the tape for the broadcast TV station. And you can't just say, okay, well, can you copy us that tape and send us a copy? Because it doesn't work like that from a security standpoint. The tape that's for TV broadcast is for the TV broadcast, and they only make one of those. If you want them to make something that's for another purpose, one, you have to pay the editing studio again, and two, it has to be they have to be given official word essentially that they can give this not yet aired material to another partner who is a trusted partner and has a contract. So when you're doing DVD licensing, oftentimes you can get away with saying, okay, everything's set, but not actually have the contract signed. You only need to sign the contract before you get the materials, and that can happen a little bit later, right? But for simulcasts, you need the materials immediately. So you have to get the contract signed right then. And that's why oftentimes simulcasts start late, is because somebody in the chain of who has to agree on signing a contract takes a little bit extra time, but before that contract is signed, you're not getting those copies of the tapes for your simulcasts, because the editing studio will refuse to send it to anyone who isn't, you know, they don't have proof. It really claims rights to the shows, because
could just grab a master.
Right. Well, yeah. And if they do that, they end up sending a master or a copy of a master to someone who doesn't actually have things signed on the dotted line. They're the ones who are culpable.
Oh yeah, they could get sued for that.
Right. By whoever decided that it wasn't a good idea to sign that simulcast contract. And anyway, so everybody has to be very careful about things, and it's actually you need to work harder to get things signed on the dotted line sooner for simulcasts. Now, actually, that's another reason why there was growing pains, because these are fairly new contracts and new relationships and new companies like Crunchyroll, which, you know, new company building relationships. And that's why it took a while. But now, after 2 years or so, those relationships are fairly settled, and the way the simulcast contracts work is fairly settled. And thankfully, getting people's signatures on new shows has now become much more routine, so it's not as difficult. And actually, I don't know if you noticed, but Crunchyroll started announcing things quite early this season.
Yeah, they kind of seem to be way ahead of where they were.
Right, and that's not necessarily because the Japanese companies are so much more progressive and anything. It's just because the contracts are set. Everybody knows each other at this point. And basically, you know, a month ago, you know, Crunchyroll and the other competitors out there, like Nico Nico, go up and say, "Hey, what's coming up next season?" And they go, "Okay, we got this and this." And, you know, then they start making offers back and forth. And when they agree, come to an agreement, it's done. And here's the contract. They take the contract from last season. They swap the name out. They swap the value for whatever the new MG is this season. And it's done.
Are you upwind far enough that you don't really hear back from Crunchyroll and Funimation or whoever about how well they're doing, or are you privy to all that?
Oh well, I'm not privy to nobody is privy to the, you know, the actual details aside from what they decide to tell you publicly. So everything I hear is, you know, filtered through whatever they want us to hear. But simulcasting, again, it's difficult to when you talk to Crunchyroll, they'll be very careful to say that they're profitable now, and that they've been profitable since they announced that profitability, I guess about a year ago at this point. But they're also, you know, very careful to say that as a whole. So you don't know which shows are not profitable for them, which shows they. I'm sure that, you know, there are some shows where that aren't making money, that they paid, you know, too much for up front, and you can sort of tell. They don't show the view numbers, but they have, like, you know, you can look at the number of comments per episode, right?
Right.
You can sort of get an idea of how many people are actually watching it. But, you know, it's sort of obvious from an outside perspective when a site is doing well, because they'll have better advertisement, for example. You know, you can tell when they have a nice big advertisement for some new video game or something. Yeah, well, you know, that's going to be that brings in a lot of money, right? Yeah. And so you can assume that things are doing okay when you see a site that is putting in new features and is active. And so I think that's the best judgment you can do. And I don't have inside information that is particularly reliable to give you at this point. I mean, you have your own inside information about your own ventures into the simulcast realm, but anyway, so back to the original point of the process and how it's changed. I think everything has just gotten easier, and people have gotten more used to what's necessary to be done. Now, the ultimate goal, the thing that would really be nice would be is if we never had to deal with a tape to begin with, and the editing studios could just, you know, supply the TV stations and everybody else with the same digital file in whatever format, instead of some tape, which you need a $50,000 or $100,000 deck to actually play back. And that is still not happening yet in the industry. However, I could definitely see it happening for some of the lower budget shows, but then maybe ones that are actually end up not. If you're not going to be on TV in the first place, then there's no reason to make an HD cam for broadcast. Therefore, in fact, you might be able. This might be the case for certain net internet OVA sort of type shows that are only really broadcast online, and then that might trickle down. We'll see how it ends up playing out in the future. HD cams have got a big hit going back to the earthquake and tsunami last year. The factory up in Sendai, I think you discussed this on your show once, but there was actually the factory in Sendai that creates HDCam and HDCam SR tapes. There's only one factory, I think, in the world that actually does that, because Sony refuses to license out the patents. And therefore, and that factory was seriously damaged in the earthquake and tsunami. I'm pretty sure it's okay now, but it caused a huge hiccup in the supply chain. And for a while there, getting brand new HDCam and HDCam SR types was really difficult, and you sort of had to have a friend of a friend that knew where there, you know, a guy had a couple in his basement that you could, you know, pick up. It was that kind of thing.
Oh, I was hearing stories about, like, you know, contracts are signed, and then they would they were so terrified of letting go of their only master copies that, you know, nobody could get any materials.
Mm. Well, basically, I think there was a lot of. Thankfully, the anime industry is close enough to the television television stations. And in Japan, the TV stations had tons, you know, racks and racks of archived HD cam tapes that they could copy over. And for a while, what they did is they scavenged from their the TV stations would scavenge for used tapes, and they would make do with that. And you know, a lot of people in the industry, especially the editing studios, are like, you can't use a used HD cam tapes. You got to use a new, brand new, fresh tape, or it's gonna, you know, the video quality will degrade, which is it's just sort of ludicrous, because HD cam is a fully digital tape format. So either it works or it doesn't. That sort of thing. Now, it's not like the video will get more grainy if you use used HD cam tape.
No, it either works or it doesn't.
Yeah, well, and so yeah, the shelf life might be shorter for a tape that's not new if you overwrite it, but that's about it. There's no real worry about that. So actually, in the anime industry, the necessary things were done to keep, you know, the broadcasts going. You always had a tape available to do the new episode that'll be aired the next week. Now, did you have enough spare tapes to send to your licensors overseas? No. Not for a little while. And so, yeah, it was very difficult to find those extra tapes that you would need for that sort of thing. But at least in terms of the everyday life, I don't think HD cam shortages ended up delaying any broadcasts. They managed to make do because of their position with the TV industry was close enough where they had access to the materials. I'm not sure about other parts of the industry. There might have been some consternation there, but at least in terms of the broadcast, it was okay.
So getting back to what you actually do, I was always curious, how many shows at once, I should say, are you actually doing?
Well, first off, I should say that me personally, I'm translating 4 shows at the moment. I translate Fairy Tail, Toriko, Beelzebub, and Sket Dance. So if you notice, I sort of, for some reason, I'm doing every Shonen Jump show and or Shonen Jump wannabe show that's on air. And actually, that's not because I love, I'm just a huge fan of Shonen shows, but although I definitely enjoy the shows, the reason is just from a practical perspective, those are really long-running shows, and I translate those myself just because I have the most, you know, I am the most consistent, and I can be assured that I'll be here as opposed to some contractor who could, you know, have other things they need to do or move on. So therefore, I take the longest running shows for myself. However, actually, as things move on, I'm probably going to drop after Beelzebub is finished here shortly, as you've probably heard the rumors. I'm going to probably only continue translating three shows and not take on a fourth show anymore. There was a time back when I was just working on my own that I was doing 6 or 7 shows at one time. And that was sort of the limit, I think, of what I can reasonably do. Now, that's the shows that I handle, translate myself. However, I have a team of around 4, 5, 6 translators out there, depending on at any one time. And actually, I have a couple of new people who I'm testing out right now with some non-simulcast work. And we, at any point in time, handle between 10 and 15 simulcast shows. So that can be all different types. For example, right now, we're doing Gundam AGE, for example, which is being simulcast only in South Asia on YouTube.
Yeah, very helpful that.
Well, no, it is because guess what? Those subtitles are being used on the Blu-rays. Oh. So you may have found the news that the English subtitles on the Gundam AG Blu-rays, and actually those are the same set of subtitles that we're using. And actually that's another thing I sort of have invented for the industry. If anybody downloads the latest Aegis Sub 2.1.9, which is the freeware software, the timing and subtitling software, and you go to export, you'll notice there's a new exporting function to STL, and that actually is something that I worked together with the creator of Aegis Sub who added in that export function after I gave him the specifications, and Bandai helped to fund that. And what we do is we export the subtitles to STL, which is a format that Q-Tech, the Blu-ray authoring studio who handles all of Sunrise's stuff and most of the rest of the industry, can import directly into their Blu-ray authoring software. So actually, I created that export, or I helped to fund that export function, which now makes things much, much easier to go from the format for subtitles that is useful for simulcasting to a format which can be converted into decent Blu-ray subtitles.
It's too bad nobody else uses that format.
Not true. Yeah. Actually, Europe uses that format very heavily.
Oh.
STL is the European TV Subtitle Broadcast Standard.
Right, STL EBU.
Yeah, right. That's the – yeah, so there are two – there's two types of STL. There's – nobody cares about this.
No, nobody cares. So we should move on.
Anyway, but the point is, however, that I'm working to make it easier for Japanese companies to take the subtitles that they are used for simulcast and convert and just, you know, easily convert them to something that they can give to the Blu-ray authoring studios that they use to put on the discs. And that's what we did for Gundam AGE, and we're doing for a number of other shows. And and if you see a couple of more for Black Rock Shooter, for example, the subtitles, we're handling the subtitles for that, and we're also handling the subtitles for the Blu-rays. The subtitles that we did for Fate Zero for Nico Nico are also on the Blu-rays in Japan, and I guess we could say dual import Blu-ray sets that they're selling in the U.S. under Aniplex USA. So that's also our translation. I handle those sorts of shows, as well as we do DVD subtitles for releases in Australia. For example, the release of Tatami Galaxy in Australia was something I did the DVD subtitles for, that as well as recent shows. We're actually working on Higurashi Kai, the season of Higurashi that was never licensed by Genion in America. Siren has actually licensed it first time in English in the world, and we're handling the subtitles for that for the DVD release, which should, you know, be ready in a month or two. I'm not sure exactly when it's scheduled, but that's some cool things that we do. So we don't just do simulcasts, actually. We actually do subtitles for all mediums, Blu-ray, DVD, and sales is also a very important aspect. We'll do an episode or two of a brand new show, which we can then make a simple little DVD with subtitles that they can use for trade shows or hand out to prospective licensors. And actually, Tokyo Anime Fair is coming up, and I'm getting a whole ton of requests to do a bunch of little work like that, which is always makes this time of year very busy. So in terms of which types of subtitles I actually create, it's not just simulcast, but all over the place. And everyone, you know, requires a little bit different formatting.
Right. So you're, what's your big frustration right now? What are you trying to get done that just, it's like moving a brick wall?
Okay. So, I think I should use this opportunity then to make, my announcement on the program tonight. So, I actually, there are two announcements. One is personal and one is much more, bigger. However, personally, I'm currently working at Tezuka Productions. However, next month, I will be moving positions, and I am taking on a job at a company called ADEC, A-DEC, which is a fully owned subsidiary of Yomiuri Television. And I will actually be their chief of localization and video demand encoding and localization services. I think my full title hasn't been decided yet. However, I will essentially be in charge of the current business that I'm doing, which I will be taking en masse to a new company that's sort of sponsoring me, as well as actually being in charge of the encoding and services and things like captioning in Japanese, for example, for Yomiuri Television's domestic properties as well, and all of the VOD services in Japan. So, for example, the cell phone services, the online streaming services in Japan for Japanese television programs. And I'm going to sort of help reform their workflow as well in Japan. And at the same time, in that same position, Yomiuri Television, ADEC, and YTVE, which is a licensing and it's sort of a licensing sub-company of YTV, are banding together along with a number of Japanese animation companies with long histories to form a brand new website, whose name I can't reveal yet, but it will hopefully be starting in the summer or early fall, which will be focused on actually streaming classic anime, and it will be a site which will be designed to stream classic anime, but then also provide the users of the site opportunity to support the anime with which they love, and eventually be able to buy DVDs or other goods related to the anime. It's basically like if you combined YouTube with Kickstarter. is the idea. So we'll have a way for fans to be able to become supporters of anime, this classic anime, that maybe would never have a chance to be licensed in the U.S. Or Canada. The site is U.S. and Canada only at the moment, current plans. They never have a chance to be licensed by normal companies because it's just too, the profit margins are too small, or, you know, it's not worth it, and the rights holders are too difficult to sign the licensing agreements. Instead, what we're doing is we're forming a coalition of Japanese companies who are actually coming together to form an LLP, a limited liability partnership. Therefore, there's no licensing that's even necessary. The companies are going to basically doing this themselves. And that will be the linchpin of how the site works and how you can be sure that when you're supporting an anime on the site, you know that it's going straight to the animation companies and not through some middleman or anything like that. So it's going to be a really cool project, and that is what I'm currently the most frustrated about, to go back to your question. The reason is that, you know, we've been in negotiations for this for almost a year. I know people are going to – actually, I've been noticed that there was a – I think the latest Answer Man column, somebody who suggested – I think one of the questions that he asked was, is there – you know, could you have like a Kickstarter for anime? I was like, yes. That's what I've been doing for the past year, trying to get worked out. And so actually, yeah, I've really been working on this idea for more than a year now, and with my partner at YTV that I've been working with. And we've been in negotiations with the animation companies to really get them on board. And we definitely have a number that are very excited and very much on board. But despite that, getting the final contract signed, getting the hanko, the official Japanese stamp that you do when you use contracts, getting them to stamp the contract in the end and just sort of say, okay, let's do it. The final little push is where we're at right now, and it's difficult. It's frustrating. It takes time. And so we're going to start with the creation of the actual website itself, which I will be in charge of. I will be in charge of managing. We're hiring a web development firm, which I've found to actually create the streaming site and streaming / supporting site. It's going to be a combination of the two, and it'll be really neat. And I'm really excited about that project. And I'm sure that I'll be back on this program, in a couple of months when we have actual anime titles to announce and to say how you can actually support these titles and make a real difference. You can see. You can say, okay, I just supported this title. That's $5 that, you know, gets me that much closer to the goal of getting DVDs for this show. And you can see exactly how many people are going to support the show and bring, get out there and say, you know, on Twitter and Facebook and say, come on, everybody, you know, check this show out. It's awesome. Yeah, okay, it's from 1978, but that doesn't mean it's any less awesome.
That's really, really ambitious. When do you hope to be fully up and running?
I really would like to be able to have this kicked off. I think we'll be able to have a beta. It's going to be built from scratch. So we're going to probably have a beta test in the summer, and we're going to kick it off in full in the fall. We hope to have a whole bunch of shows. I mean, the idea here is that we're going to take from the catalog the best that we can get and put it up there for fans to choose, really. You know, we'll translate the first, the first 10, 13 episodes. And then as the shows get support, you know, there'll be the current plan is that, you know, there'll be a current level of support that once it passes, then we'll translate the next block of shows, the next block of episodes. And then after, when it passes the second goal, then we'll put out DVDs for the show. And then the people who supported the show monetarily, they'll be able to get that money back, as discounts when they actually buy the DVDs. So, we might even have levels where you could support, you could pay $100 or something and become like a sponsor, and we'll actually put your name in the DVD as someone who, who really, really loves the show and wanted to make sure that it was spread worldwide. Because these are really classic titles that, there are people out there who love these shows and would love to see them and see them available in the U.S. and with English subtitles, which will be the linchpin here. So we'll see. Not every show, not every classic anime is gonna have that kind of love. But there are so many out there that I think could could be loved like that and could come out. I know that actually what you tried with the some of those TMS shows and the print-on-demand DVDs, you know, and from everything I hear, actually, the sales are pretty good. There was a lot of love out there for some of these classic, you know, classic properties.
They weren't bad. Orgasm and Cat's Eye, definitely.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, but yeah, but see, those two, right. Orgasm and Cat's Eye. And actually, I think the people who watched Remy loved Remy. But the problem was that was the print-on-demand thing. And here, thankfully, DVD printing has gotten cheap enough. The actual just pressing of DVDs is not the real cost. The cost is the translation. And the getting the materials ready, and because ADEC is a company that is also an editing studio, and I'll have all the editing lab in house, and I of course have all the translators and necessary expertise there. We can do everything in house for this and keep costs very low for producing these DVDs, where we don't have to outsource anything because we are the outsourcer. Right. We're the people come to do this, and therefore this can work. This can actually make money, and it can make money on shows that could never make money in any other way. It's not that these shows are unlicensable because no one wants to take a risk. It's because they really wouldn't make money under the normal model. There's, when you have too many middlemen and too many people taking a cut, you know, you'd end up with making $50, $100 an episode if you're lucky. But this way, we can really, by having the company itself be an LLP of the rights holders, then all the profit will go straight to the animation companies. Is really the neat thing about this model. So it can work for these classic titles. This isn't a model that I think would work for brand new shows, but it's definitely something that we can keep in mind for things that aren't specifically super classic anime. But you know, we'll see.
Well, here's my suggestion.
Zach is here.
Yeah, I'm still here. So say like, now you said classic anime. So are we talking, sounds like 70s and 80s, any 90s?
To be honest, actually, although classic anime, I think, is sort of the best idea. Actually, it's not just classic anime, but I would say anime that needs love, just to say it in general. So maybe it could be a show that only was put out half on DVD in America, and then the company went bust. And, you know, that there are fans out there who'd love to get that second half, but you know, they can't. You can't just go to Japan and say, here, you know, license this to someone so I can get the second half of this series. No, they have to have a sign that there are these fans out there that want, you know, to see the show. And a site like ours would be able to put up a couple episodes for streaming, allow people to actually go and put their money where their mouth is and say, okay, I'm going to, you know, pay a couple dollars to support the show, and then I'm going to get my friends to support the show, and you collect enough money or collect enough pledges, essentially, as a like Kickstarter to demonstrate, you know, to demonstrate the want for a DVD set or to continue the translation of the series, and we can do that. So it doesn't have to be an old show. It just has to be a show which can work under this model, where which is not as suited to brand new shows only because people aren't familiar with what a brand new show is yet, and so they're not going to support it without knowing anything about the show at all. And also, new shows, you know, of course, there's still plenty of chance for them to be licensed under the normal models and make plenty of money. So it's not necessarily going to be exclusive classic anime. But of course, the anime partner companies that we have, the properties that they will want to push in the beginning, I think, will be the older classic titles that they were not able to license under normal circumstances. So I think we're going to have a lot of classic anime like that. Unfortunately, I can't tell you any specific titles yet because which exactly animation companies are going to end up being the final partners isn't set. So, but you could probably guess considering where I'm coming from and the people I work with.
Yeah, it sounds like something in the case of like Higurashi Kai, like you mentioned, would be perfect, mm-hmm. perfect for this. Because that's a show that can't get released here because the previous seasons didn't sell well enough, but there's a giant outpouring of people who are, why can't I get this on DVD? Like, people want that, but not enough, but maybe enough through Kickstarter, through this thing, could get enough support to actually see some sort of a DVD release here. So that seems like that's perfect for that. But my suggestion was, if there's a really bad old show that we just want to sort of ironically see a DVD release for, there should be some way to indicate that when you put our name in the credits. So, like, say, like, you put a Violinist of Hamelin up on this service, and I'm like, here's $1,000, make some DVDs. Just, you know, put a little LOL next to my name in the credits.
Zach, we will be happy to add in the $1,000 Zach sponsorship, which anybody can pledge $1,000, and you know, you get 40 characters, whatever you want, unless it's, you know, we'll change the rating on the DVD, and we won't even tell the licensor about it.
I want my Strange Dawn Blu-rays.
actually, that's some of the things that we're thinking about doing on the site. For example, even at just like the $1 level, you know, we want to pledge $1. I was thinking, for example, I'm going to steal the idea from the Japanese Nikodoga, but, you know, we could, in the normal sponsor section of the video, we could, if you pledge $1, you could put in a little, your own sponsor message, you know, and say, I Zach have sponsored this anime, now have fun, you know, when it comes up after the opening, you know, that sort of thing. And it could all be done digitally. I mean, this isn't like, you know, that wouldn't be on the DVDs, that would just be on the stream. But, you know, that's the kind of thing where I want to give the fans out there an opportunity to support anime in every level. Right, not just pay a certain amount per month, but to say, okay, I did, you know, this show isn't very good, but I'm going to watch it anyway. Fine, you know, you watch the show, you know, with advertisements and the streaming, you make us a little bit of money. Or then the person who, you know, enjoys the show but maybe isn't sure about it, you could pay $1 or something and put it in a funny sponsor message, or you could pay $5, pledge $5, and say, you know what, if this comes, I want this to come out on DVD, and when it does come out on DVD, you get that, you know, you get a $5 coupon for the DVD. So, you know, that sort of thing. Or you could put $100 and get your name in the credits, or you have $1,000 and say something horrible and terrible at the end of the credits. And actually, honestly, we're thinking about all kinds of different cool perks, to steal Kickstarter's term, that we could, you know, work with the fans. And of course, this is a partnership with the animation studios themselves. Therefore, we have a lot more options that we could go. We might even be able to get, you know, the original producers and people and the creators to help out, you know, sign some things for people who, you know, pledge money, and make this a really cool and almost interactive site where, you know, just that much closer to the original creators than anything has ever been done before. And that's really sort of what I'm excited about. So we're working on it right now to get the final thing signed and then get the site built, which will take a couple months. And that's why I think, you know, we could start a beta maybe in the summer and really kick it off in the fall. That's our current plan. And I'll be sort of in charge of the project, where I am at ADEC, because Yomiuri Television and ADEC are the primary sponsors. It'll basically be 50% Yomiuri Group, and the other 50% will be animation companies. That's the current, you know, strategy.
Wow. I'm like picturing a commercial where you've got sort of slow motion clips of like forgotten old giant robot shows and play a Sarah McLachlan song over it and implore people to sponsor these forgotten anime.
Of all the genres, Giant Robot actually is going to be the most difficult. I'm going to be honest with you. The rights situation in America for giant robot shows is difficult. You know, ask Daryl. Actually, I don't know. I was thinking about hiring him as a consultant for Giant Robot or something. But if he has any opinions on the best giant robot shows that would work for this, and that, you know, he thinks the rights are okay, tell him to give me a call. But actually, I would love to do that. Although a lot of those shows are owned by Sunrise, and Sunrise, you know, usually has their own plans for these sorts of things. But it's not. I wouldn't say it's impossible. There's there's always the one or two that, you know, we can get the rights for. Like Go Nagai shows would be really difficult. I can tell you that right now.
Nobody wants them anyway.
That might be true, but you know what? That's not really for us to judge. The whole point about this site is not to necessarily say nobody wants a Go Nagai show. No, we'll put up what I'd like to do is be able to put up a show and see whether it gets any support. And if it doesn't get any support, then, you know, maybe we put it on the back burner and it doesn't get fully translated. I mean, that's sort of the idea, is it's your support that keeps the show going and that moves it towards ever closer towards getting a DVD release. release, you know, and that's the and if it doesn't, then another show which has more support will take its place, and it's really up to the fans. It really is. I want to make the site where it's not our decision necessarily which shows get DVDs and get put out, but you can see for yourself. Oh, okay, that show didn't get any support, and yeah. I guess nobody wants DVDs for it, and then you can be really sad when you're the one of the 10 people who love that show. You know what? That's life, and sometimes you're in the minority. Oh. Anyway, as for actually my personal opinion, this is my personal opinion, is that magical girl shows will be the most popular with this model.
Of course, you would say that.
No, but think about it from a logical. Of course, I would. But think about it from a logical perspective, though. I think that the group of people who grew up on Sailor Moon are just the right age right now for wanting to be curious about the more classic shows from that genre that have never been, and those shows have never been released in the U.S. compared to giant robot shows, which have quite a storied history. Magical girl shows have been so very rarely, you know, licensed in the U.S. and Canada, and therefore, actually, from a rights situation, we can work those out easier. And I think there's such a great amount of content out there. I wish I could drop some names, but I can't yet. But anyway, I personally, my prediction, and this is just a prediction, not a business sense or anything, but is that those will get support faster than a lot of other genres out there. I don't know, giant robot fans, prove me wrong. Slice of life fans, get out there and support the anime you love. That's the motto for the site. Yeah. Still pending, but
suggestion for the name, you can call it putuporshutup.com.
Yeah, you know, no, actually, we have a name, but it's not yet finalized, so I can't announce it publicly, unfortunately.
Well, that is a really cool thing, I gotta say. I think that there's no downside to that. So, it's not going to be damaging to the Region 1 industry as it currently exists. Mm. It gives fans a chance to actually support these obscure shows that, you know, maybe just enough people like it to get a DVD release, and yeah, it's cool. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Actually, maybe if I could expand on it a little bit, there's a bigger goal to it than just the classic anime, and just anime even. To be honest, we're thinking about taking this site, and we have a classic anime site, but we're actually going Yomiuri Television. One of the reasons they're funding this is because they believe in the idea not just for anime but for all entertainment. And they believe that that a lot of what is going on in terms of the future of entertainment and how things are funded is that things will start moving towards a cloud patronage funding system, especially for independent artists like music and independent movies and things like that. And we're going to actually work on creating not just the site, but later on, we're going to try and create a truly global site for brand new entertainment, not just anime, but music and movies, where people, it'll be like Kickstarter, but specifically Japanese entertainment. And we use the connections that Yomiuri Television has with the local entertainers and local talent. People will be able to put up previews and get support to create their movies and their CDs and their concerts. And it'll be a really great site for funding brand new material. And actually, even in anime, I if you do the numbers, I was thinking about it and saying, it wouldn't be that hard to go out there and fund, you know, a core of anime or 50% of a core of anime with this sort of cloud funding system. If you go and look at the Article 2 of Anime Economy, you'll realize that that's a lot of money people are putting up front for a very risky amount of possible return, right? And that right now, so much of the industry is based on a couple of really huge hits and a whole bunch of things that lose money. So if in the end, instead, you have a system like this where people fund a large portion of the show ahead of time, essentially by pledging to support the creators and the artists that they love, or support a remake of a show of a manga that they love, for example, or even an original work with a creator that they've have really enjoyed in the past. If fans end up supporting that by pledging money ahead of time, then there can be so much more open freedom in terms of creation, and you might be able to break out of this cycle in the industry where all anime is designed just to sell something else. Now, anime has always been designed to sell things like toys and stuff and whatever, but it's just gotten much worse and much more difficult to make something truly original lately. And by having an option like this for funding, an option of sort of cloud funding, essentially, is what I don't know if that's a proper buzzword or whether I'm just inventing that, but could be really great for the industry as a whole. And although this isn't directly related to the classic anime site, it's something that we're looking towards as a really a future direction for the whole industry in general. So it's not. You said it's not going to directly impact the RR1 industry, and that actually is very true. It's totally separate from new shows and DVDs and Blu-rays as they exist now. But I do hope that it ends up affecting the anime industry itself and how shows are funded and maybe how some new creators are discovered. And, you know, if we want to talk a really big picture, that's our dream.
Wow. Okay. That's mighty ambitious, but you're ahead of the curve because it appears that that is where a lot of entertainment funding is going towards. So
yeah, it's ahead of the curve or not. I mean, it's obvious, right? Just how do you solve piracy? How do you solve the problem that information wants to be free? Well, the simple thing is you and yet still support creators. I mean, I know you debate this all the time, and the answer is that you move towards a system more like what happened in the Renaissance, more like a patron system, where creators are supported not by buying the things they create, but instead by just supporting the creators themselves to create, you know, financially, to live and have a, you know, and just, you know, create stuff. And instead of the Renaissance, where it was just a couple of, you know, really rich people who, you know, supported the artists, and now we have the ability on the internet where millions of people can each contribute a little bit of money, you know, to that guy who makes those YouTube videos, which are just so hilarious, right? And up ahead of time and support that guy so that he's still making those hilarious YouTube videos till he's 65. But still, you know, create entertainment for the masses, and that's the solution to the problem. I mean, I don't know if it's the only solution. It's probably is just one part of how the industry, whole industry as a whole, will evolve. I'm not thinking, you know, you're going to make the next summer blockbuster movie because you're going to get a million people to pay $100. No, but you could definitely create a whole bunch of really great art and support artists with this model. And I think it applies to anime as well as everything else in the world. And this would be a really great thing to attempt to get in on the ground floor on. And I think Yomiuri Television, the reason they're supporting this idea is because they believe in this too. And they believe in supporting, you know, going out there and finding these local artists and giving them a way to get support online and also have the mouthpiece to talk to a lot of people online. And a good site like we could create could be a great advertisement for that sort.
Okay, well, it'll be very interesting to see where all this goes. I'm really curious now to see exactly how this all pans out.
I'm going to be busy. Yeah. That's what's going to happen. Very busy.
Yeah. As someone who likes obscure old shit, I wish you Godspeed, my friend.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be. I'm going to. You know, I'm expecting like at least $1,000 a month of pledges just from you.
We'll see how the Blu-ray business goes.
That's true. Oh, well, who knows? You know, maybe if it goes really well, we could have like a DVD level of support and like a Blu-ray full telesign from film level, you know.
How much would that be? Jesus.
Well, I know if we get a million people to pledge a dollar. I don't think that's happening for most of these shows, but who knows if actually that's true. It's just not happening for most of these shows. Although I've been noticing the actual telescene equipment, you can go and you can buy some semi-pro level telescene equipment that basically uses a fancy DSLR on a rig with an old-fashioned film player, and you can get some amazing results with just something like that. It only costs about $10,000.
I always wonder about those things.
Justin, you should do this. I think this would be perfect for you. You should go and rig up your own telescene equipment and have that be a part of your side business, and then you can be the one that actually does the restoration of films of classic anime yourself.
Oh no, you saw what happened to Funimation. No way I'm touching that.
No, you should, man. That'd be a perfect job for you. You could spend the rest of your days in a dusty basement, aligning.
Photoshopping dirt out of.
Aligning film reels.
Absolutely.
Because of the love. What about the love, Justin?
There is no love. Once you spend your 30th hour on a single episode of anime, there is no more love.
You don't want to know how many hours of anime I have worked on in the past 2 years, though.
you're a little more devoted than I am, I think.
No, well, thankfully, I am a little bit more diversified, and so thankfully, I can. But actually, you know, when talking about 1,000 episodes, or I guess it's almost almost 2,000 episodes now of anime I've ended up working on in some way or another, so it's a lot.
Yes, it is. All right, we should get to Twitter.
Okay.
We've got some Twitter questions for you here. All right, from Dragon Zig. Does getting a license to simulcast help or hinder a series if and when the discussion for a DVD rights comes up?
The answer to that question depends on what era you're talking about. At the start, I think it was actually pretty clear that it did hinder DVD licenses because simulcasting was new, and I think a lot of the licensors were a little bit of afraid of it at the time. The DVD licensors were a little afraid of it at the time, and so they were sort of, and of course Crunchyroll was you know a usurper in a way, and they didn't want you know they wanted to sort of push back against that, but then. Actually, as time went on, the simulcast became more and more of a necessary tool as part of just advertisement and also figuring out which shows are going to be better. However, that question now is a moot point, a completely moot point, because simulcasting and DVD rights are being more and more, you know, all rights is back in fashion. And what's happening is a DVD company like Sentai is joining forces with a streaming company like Crunchyroll, or Funimation is joining forces with a streaming company like Nico Nico. And they're offering full package deals at the same time, or package for streaming plus an option for the DVD later. And that way, it's sort of a moot point, I think. I think... it's not whether a show is streamed or not that affects it so much as whether or not that stream is successful. And if it's not streamed at all, then that doesn't mean it's not going to come out on DVD. What it matters is whether the show is popular and, you know, on fan subs. Like, take Madoka, for example. I mean, people weren't ignorant about how popular that show was. It wasn't streamed at all. No one did anything legally. And that didn't mean that people, you know, didn't realize it was a big property. And so whether it's streamed or not directly is not... doesn't matter. What matters is whether the show is successful and whether fans like it. That is the basic answer. That's what makes the difference between whether a DVD or Blu-ray comes out.
Okay. Scott Spaziani asks, what's the shortest lead time you've had to deal with?
Negative. I mean, there's been plenty of shows where we don't get materials until after it airs. So it's sort of difficult to then the company will come to us and say, okay, well, we can only get you materials on this day. When can you have it done by? Because we want to launch it as soon as possible. So in that case, you know, we just have to say, well, we can handle things in this time frame or not. There was once or twice when I got materials within about 12 hours of airing. This was supposed to be a true simulcast show, you know, and so I made it. I think that was one time when if it's that short a time, you're getting a draft. I'll do the translation, I'll do the timing, I'll go over it again and send it off, and that's about it. And if my, you know, if my quality checkers happens to be awake during those 3 hours that are left, you know, okay. But there's also, yeah, I also have to know that even for a system like Crunchyroll, for example, you have to have the subs ready a decent number of hours before it launches, because Crunchyroll will tell you if you ask them. But they do encodes for all different kinds of devices. They have iPhone. They have their app on iPhones and Roku and Android. And so for every time that you send them a subtitle script, they end up doing like 10 different encodes. Some of them with hard subtitles and some of them with soft subtitles. Therefore, when you send them the script, then that takes a, you know, decent amount of time to actually do all those and push them out to the servers. So you have to actually get those done even a bit before it actually launches, or it's not going to be in time. So, you know, when you're talking about 12 hours before it airs, that's maybe gives you 5 or 6 hours to work on it. That's about it. That is thankfully is rare. Lately, just to make a point, I don't guarantee anything if I have less than 72 hours. Right. So, you know, 72 hours is going to get you a translation, an edit, and a quality check, and it'll be good quality. Anything less than that, and I'm not guaranteeing you you're getting it any sooner than that. Now, can we do things in a 24-hour turnaround? Yes. But will we do that every week? Not usually. That's only, you know, exceptional circumstances. Things are delayed. Fine, you know, people will stay up all night and do it. But I can't force my subcontractors to do that every week. It's untenable in the long run.
Right. Okay. Arabesque9 asks, which project were you most happy translating?
Most happy? Well, that's sort of an interesting question because, you know, there's the projects where I, you know, which anime do I enjoy the most itself? Then there's the projects where, you know, is the translation job itself the most fun? And then there's the ones where, you know, do I just enjoy the fact that people, you know, enjoy the work? I would say maybe the best thing I ever did in terms of personal enjoyment is the Haruhi movie. I translated the Haruhi movie directly for Kadokawa. If you remember, they had a special screening of it at, I think it was, Anime Expo, it was actually at the movie theater in, San Francisco and the world premiere. And I was the one who actually created the subtitles for the film reel, which they then shipped around the country and showed everywhere before it ended up being licensed by Bandai and put on DVD and Blu-ray. And that was a really fun project, and it was also, you know, I got to do Haruhi, which is a show I was enjoyed back when it originally aired, and also I got to go into Imagica and actually be there as they were laser printing the subtitles on the actual film, which was really cool. First time I've ever had that sort of thing happen. And then also just seeing the fans' reaction as they went to the premieres and were, you know, the only 30 fans that had actually seen the movie that had actually seen the movie officially in the theater with the subtitles, and everybody really, you know, and of course it was a great film. So that was probably the project I was most happy in all round respects. Definitely. Now, of course, as the current things I'm translating, like I do Sket Dance, and I really love that show. It's a great show. However, the actual process of translating the show is not very happy because it is one of the wordiest, and it's like Gintama. It just is joke after joke after joke. And so that show will be 500 lines an episode, whereas an episode of Fairy Tail will be 250. So in terms of my time, it's not a very happy show to translate. But in terms of enjoyment and the actual show itself, it's so enjoyable that I find it hard to say no.
All right. I think I already know the answer to this question, but Land of Obscusion wants to know, if you had free reign to choose any anime from any year to translate for online streaming, what would it be and why?
Sure. Let's see. Online streaming. Well, from a personal perspective, I'd want to translate the original Bakemonogatari. Nisemonogatari is being streamed right now, but the original Bakemonogatari was never streamed at all or released in any way, shape, or form legally, which is actually the reason for that is because the rights are owned by a different company than Aniplex handles Nisemonogatari, but the original Bakemonogatari is Kodansha, and therefore they have different global strategies, and that's how you get a sequel to a series not being licensed, but the original series not being licensed at all. It's really unfortunate, actually, for the franchise. But I love the original show, and I'd love to be able to translate that just because it's so the dialogue is so much more interesting than your average anime.
Okay. I was gonna my guess was Pretty Cure, but I guess
Well, no, I do translate Pretty Cure, actually. Okay. Officially for Toei. It's just not used in the U.S. market. Actually, I've been translating Pretty Cure officially for years. My scripts are actually used in Europe for the other European language dubs. They're used as reference for those dub script creations. So, yes, I would love for those to maybe be. I would love for Pretty Cure to get licensed in the U.S. In some fashion or another, and then use my already created translations for that. But since I'm already working on it, I don't think that was a proper answer to the question.
Okay, well, I stand corrected. All right, Paul Freeland asks, how economically sustainable is simulcasting, and what are the major hurdles to it becoming a bigger part of the U.S. industry?
Simulcasting on its own is not economically sustainable. in my opinion. The only way that would be able to be true is if you somehow could really knock off all of the, let's call them the streaming clone sites out there, that just stream things the second anything appears on the internet, then they mirror it and took other ads. That is just a leech that just drains off the profitability of any possible streaming site, especially ones which are gated, which there's a subscription or something. That just makes it really hard to get a large user base for something like that. And then you have sites where you have sites like Hulu, for example, which is a perfect example of how streaming, this isn't even just anime, but how streaming is such a precarious position in terms of profitability, whether some shows are going to be really profitable, make a lot of money, and then a lot of those shows are not going to make you money. And so from a sustainable, the question about sustainability, I don't think a model like streaming is sustainable when you can only make a profit on, you know, the top 20% into the top percentile of shows. That's not what I would call sustainable. Of course, in the anime industry, that's sort of the norm, so maybe that is what will end up happening. But the overall revenue from streaming is so small, it can only be a part of a more global of a overall strategy. I don't feel it's on its own is a sustainable strategy. It has to be a part of a overall marketing strategy. That's my personal opinion. I think there needs to be ways that the fans... even, you know, whether it's high, whether it's Blu-rays or whether it's figures or whether it's other ways of monetarily supporting the series, such as, you know, the kinds of patronage system I was talking about before, those are the solutions that have to be combined with streaming before it really becomes a larger sustainable market.
Okay. All right, V-Guy wants to know, you translated Dental Coil for the Australian market, but he wants your take on why that was never licensed for America.
The short answer is Tokuma Shoten.
Okay.
No, but the long answer is the rights holders for that show, international, the people who hold the international rights for that show is actually Tokuma Shoten, which you probably have never heard of if unless you're really in the industry. But they're a publisher. They're a book publisher. Right. And they don't own that many anime rights. They mainly do novels and books. And the only other show of note that they own the rights to is Legend of the Galactic Heroes. Mm. Now, you might think, oh, wait, that's another really loved show that's never been licensed in any way, shape or form. no, but the real reason is that they are very old fashioned and I'm sure that they were looking for a television deal on prime time, you know, with a dub with changed names. I mean, that's the kind of thing that I think they were looking for in the beginning. Now, it's been a number of years, and the time might finally be ripe. Now, you might say, well, then how did these guys in Australia end up licensing it? Why did Australia get it and not the U.S.? And you know what? There's actually a very good answer for that. The CEO of Siren Visual in Australia loves this show and worked to license the show for about 2 years, himself, personally. He would go to Tokuma Shoten again and again and again. And I think that he broke him down, and he finally got it and got the license. And I'm not sure what the final, you know, the money was in the end, but it was a project of love for him. And I think... and I'm really happy to be, you know, to help him with the project and also to release it for the fans who love the show. But it's just in the U.S., the amount of money would be way beyond, I think, a single individual's love. And the Australian market is small enough where that's sort of in the realm of possibility if you've got money to burn. Mm-hmm. But in the U.S., it's just difficult. And now that all the work's been done and there's a nice, good English translation on the DVDs and Tokuma Shoten is also I've started to see some things more. There's been more Tenno Coil merchandise I've been seeing around Japan. In fact, a company just came out with a brand new online, like, you know, web game, Tenno Coil themed web game. I saw advertised on Inakiba the other day, and I was like, wow, Tenno Coil's still going strong. So who knows? You know, maybe there's going to be a resurgence and it might finally come out. The Blu-ray was recently put out in Japan with the really, you know, it's actually the animation quality for the time is amazing. And so I'm actually considering buying the Blu-rays myself, but now that that's out and there's sort of been a resurgence, I wouldn't say it's beyond the realm of possibility that someone picks it up in the U.S. I think it's possible for them to do that now. That's a hint. Hey, U.S. companies, get out here and start licensing Dino Coil, okay? It's a great show.
Everybody tells me it's great. I would love to be able to watch it.
Well, you can always, all you have to do is actually import the Australian R4 DVDs.
Yeah, I deal with this stuff all day, every day. I don't go that far out of my way to watch anything.
Okay, maybe I'll go up to Siren and I'll tell him to send you guys some copies so that you can review it on your Australian site. How about that?
Okay. All right, then. Okay, Zoid9000 wants to know, on average, how long does it take you to complete a subscript for a simulcast?
Well, it depends on what part you're talking about. All told, in terms of man hours, your average simulcast is going to take like 10 man hours. That includes the translation is maybe 3 to 4 hours, editing 2 hours, and timing is another hour, maybe an hour and a half, depending on the show, and then the final checking, say, an hour. So, now, of course, there's actually... That's the script. Some simulcasts then require us to do the actual encodes for the show as well, which also takes time. But that's generally what I would say. Now, that sort of is the optimal thing where everybody is awake at the same time and, in a perfect row. So that's why I said, a day turnaround is doable, but it's difficult. Usually, 72 hours where over that time people are working for 10 to 12 man hours total is what I like to put in. You can always put in an extra quality check. You could have an extra translation check in there too, depending on the type of show and the workflow. All of my translators and editors have different skill sets, and so sometimes the translator will translate, the editor will edit, and then it'll send it back to the translator to check over things, and then it'll go on to the quality checker. But it depends on who's working on the show and the specifics of the show and the flow. Everything is a little different, so we just try and adapt as much as we can. I'm surprised we haven't gotten any questions about how much money do you make? Because everybody always asks me that online.
Even if we did, I would skip that. That's a personal thing. I wouldn't ask you that.
Well, no, actually, to be honest, though, I mean, I'm not going to say my salary or anything, but the point is actually the amount of the money and the rates for translation and improving the rates for translation that are paid in the industry was actually one of my primary goals. Essentially, what happened when simulcast starting was, MX Media and myself, I didn't mention this, but I mean, I'm an ex-fan subber. I used to fan sub for a time, and I ended up getting into this and realizing I enjoyed doing it because of fan subbing and learned a lot of the skills that I still use today. And a lot of the initial simulcast translators were ex-fan subbers. The founder of MX Media and a lot of those people were from fan subs, and they had quit fan subbing because they wanted to help the industry. There's nothing wrong with what happened, but because they came from a background of doing things for free instead of actually being professionals in the industry, that influx of new professionals who weren't motivated just by making money ended up literally halving the rates for anime translation. This has already happened with manga translation. I think you've had people on before you've had a number of guests on before who would talk about how, you used to make, $12 a page, and now you're lucky if you get four, for translating manga. And the same thing happened with anime translation, except it happened quite a bit later, essentially when simulcasts began. And that's is natural, I guess, from a market perspective, but then you had quality issues. Then it's sort of anybody and their kid who could think they could translate anime could go and do it, and make a quick extra buck. But then, can you really guarantee the quality? Can you guarantee simulcasts are so time sensitive that it's difficult to get companies to agree to those sort of things? So you do have to go to the freelance people, and then the question is, how do you make sure that their translations are good quality or not? And you have a lot of different issues like that. So essentially, I have been adapting to the market prices, but then slowly, slowly trying to get people what they deserve. And I'm proud to say that I think I pay my subcontractors quite a bit more percentage-wise than other similar outfits in the industry. I help try at least to support the people that work with me, and I think that's why I have some of the best translators in the industry that do work for me. So anyway, in terms of how much money does it make, the basic answer is no, very poor money, but I'm working on that. I'm definitely trying to make it so that somebody who is out there translating your simulcast anime doesn't have to also work at Starbucks to make a living, you know, and we'll see.
That's good. It's a fight worth having. I mean, sometimes you gotta fight to just take the economy back from people. You know, it's like, oh, look, all these people will do it for free. It's like we deal with the exact same thing with writers. Like people are shocked when they find out that Anime News Network pays everyone who writes for us. You do not work. Mm-hmm. No one works for us for free. And that's not only because, you know, we need editorial control. It's because that's how it should be. I mean, I've been a writer my whole life, you know, that I want other people to get paid for it as well. It's important. So, yeah, no, I totally see.
Actually, I'm really proud. One of the things I set up is that I have a contract with Fuji Creative to do all of their Noitamina shows.
Okay.
So actually every season there's two Noitamina shows, and one of them is controlled by Fuji Creative, and we have an ongoing contract to translate that block for eternity. Well, not eternity, but the contract goes for a certain time, and that contract, you know, guarantees a pretty decent salary to pay for the translations of that show, and it's much better than, say, the rates for some of the other simulcasts out there. And the reason why we managed to sign that contract is because I am good friends with the producer at Fuji Creative, and we worked together ever since the Tommy Galaxy on things very closely. And he trusts me, and I trust him, and we finally signed a long-term contract where we don't just handle the anime translation itself, but we handle the translations for their websites and all of their PR material, and you know, all the stuff for Black Rock Shooter that you're seeing that's in English, like the English website. That's all, we did all that, and it's all consistent. And so that was the big thing. You can have someone pay someone, you know, nothing and get no service, or you sign a contract and trust an individual that you know personally and pay them a decent wage and get a professional and a person who's someone who cares about the project that you're on. And that's the argument, right? It's not even just pay them what they deserve, but it's actually get a good quality product that's more than just, you know, some translation that appears in your inbox every week, but is actually a person who works with you. And that's how I've managed to, as you say, take back the economy with a lot of people, at least.
Okay. All right. DKR Jeremy asks, how much do you find translation notes on a simulcast can impact the overall consumption of an episode of anime?
I think, yeah, it helps. I mean, when you say overall consumption, I think I'm not sure. Do you think the question is referring to the quality of the translation or whether a translation exists or not?
I think what he's talking about specifically is, do you think putting cultural, like, translation notes in an episode means more people watch it?
No, I don't think it really matters to the most fans. I think the fans that wish they had notes or something are not going to all of a sudden stop watching, you know, anime because there's no notes in it.
Yeah.
And vice versa, if there's an occasional translation note or something, it's not going to turn almost anybody off just because there's a couple of notes on the screen. What would turn people off, I think, is heavy-handed localization or sort of old-fashioned style subtitles that, you know, where you replace the last name with the first name, if people call them that way. I think that's something that people have grown out of in terms of the consumers. And I don't, I think there's a line that you want to be careful about, but you know, if someone's eating takoyaki and the subtitles say donut holes, you know what? That's going to piss some people off.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do that. If the licensor, I think this is going to be another question, but if the licensor said something like, you know, we want to make sure that people don't realize that this temple is actually Shinto, we change it to, like, you know, Christian or something, you know, I'm going to say no. I have a line where I draw in terms of stupid localization decisions, but there are other cases where, you know, some localization can really help the script. And so there was a incident in Black Rock Shooter in one of the earlier episodes where I was the one who came up with this localization. There was a line where a character says, "Okay," a literal translation is, "Okay, we're gonna run a lap around the Tokai Road." Right? Now, I'm sure, Zach, you're fully familiar with the Tokai Road, right?
Sure.
No, of course not. That's the official name for the road that went from Tokyo, you know, around in a big loop sort of towards Mount Fuji and back around in the ancient, I'm not exactly sure which era of Japan. I think Edo era Japan. And it was it's sort of like the big market road, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's an expression, it's a kotowaza that basically means, you know, go on a long journey. Right. Mm-hmm. And it was played for a joke because she was just talking about going out for a run around the school. But so I had it translated as I had the translation. We're going to, you know, let's go out there and run to Mount Fuji and back is what I said. Mm-hmm. Now, the people complained because that was a highly non-literal translation, but and technically it was a, quote, localization, because what it is, I replaced one somewhat landmark that most people would never know with another landmark in Japan in approximately the same area, which people would know internationally. So, you know, I don't know what people's opinions on that in general, but I try to avoid notes if possible, if it's not intricate to the show or the meaning of the show. But sometimes it is intricate to the meaning of the show. And so, for example, in Usagi Drop, did you watch Usagi Drop?
No, the first episode.
Well, you know, the name of the main character, Rin, you know, means is the name of that flower, right?
Right.
Rindo. And so, you know, that's something, yeah, you have to put in a note for that, because you can't change the character's name. But it's also crucial to understand that her name means that flower. And so, yeah, you're going to put a note for that. And that's appropriate. And I don't think that turns anyone off in this day and age, especially because simulcast subtitles are sort of ethereal things. You know, it's not something permanent that's stuck on a DVD. It's not like your heart. It's that you own this, you know, note that maybe you want to turn off at some point. So I think it's okay.
Okay. Scotty415 wants to know, what is the worst thing a fan subgroup ever did that pissed you off?
Well, first off, I used to be a fan subber, so, you know, the question is, how far back do you want to go? Do you want to go back to when I was actually a fan subber myself and talking about other fan sub groups that pissed me off, you know, those anime junkies and their crappy translations,
yeah.
Right? that shows the era I was in. But no, I think generally, you also have to talk about, what do you mean by fan sub group, right? They're nowadays, there are so few true fan subgroups left that actually do their own translations.
Yeah.
Most of these groups will take the simulcast translations and edit them a little bit and make them, quote, better. Usually they'll add typesetting and things like that, which are usually limitations that, you know, are on us because of the medium that we're working in, as opposed to doing a full, you know, soft sub MKV, which is not something you can do. You can stream. So basically, I would say if you're going to just talk about anybody who's doing, say, shall we say, illegal distribution of anime, let's not call them fan subbers, but, you know, including the ripping groups and that sort of thing, the ones that piss me off the most are the ones that edit my scripts and make them and add all kinds of errors to them. There are so many groups that will edit our scripts, and they'll change things, like they'll add in extra honorifics or something that maybe we decided to translate as Lord, you know, and they'll change that back to Sama. Okay, fine, that's fine. But while you're at it, don't add in the typo. You know, while you're at it, don't add in the spelling, you know, misses. And that just sort of, you know, makes me angry. But at least at the same time, when the groups that are that bad, they almost never mention that their scripts were originally taken from ours anyway. So it's not like my name is on the crappy, you know, version with all the extra errors that they added in. So I guess all I can say is that if you're going to steal subtitles from simulcasts and make them, quote, your own, please don't add in extra errors, because it just makes you look really dumb.
Yeah, isn't it that entire effort is pretty dumb, like really dumb. Anyway.
No, look, I'm not going to knock on what people do with their free time.
I will.
If you find it fun to go and edit other people's subtitle scripts, and you know, for fun, you know what? Okay, fine. I guess some people could find that amusing. Frankly, I think you should spend the time and watch some other anime that you enjoy. So that would be better. Or if you really think you're a great editor, contact me. And you know, who knows? You might be able to do it for a living. But you know, frankly, I would be more interested in good translators than editors. So.
All right. Sewing Rose 11 wants to know: is it easier to work on shows you really like or ones you don't? Is a bland show worse than an outright horrible one?
No. Bland shows are the worst. I much rather have a show which is horrible that I hate than one that's just bland. Yeah. Thankfully, I have the luxury of not working on shows that I hate, because I have a large staff, and if there's something I hate, I go, hey, you do this, make money. but I have definitely worked on shows in the past which I have not enjoyed, and the ones that I found the worst were by far the bland shows. I worked on a show, I'm not going to say which one it is, but it was just one of those very bland harem, you know, Aero Game adaptations, and just as bland as you could get, and it was so difficult to get through that. It put me to sleep, and just every line was a slog of cliche. And I think what happens with the bland shows is translation is very much about inspiration. You know, you don't just translate a word and translate another word and then rearrange things until it's proper English grammar. That's not how translation works. You listen to the line and you're inspired with the English version of that line and you type it down. That's really more the way it works in the process of the brain once you're a good translator. And and when the show isn't inspiring, that nothing comes to mind. And it just becomes that much harder to change it into English. And so what you do is you end up with a super hyper literal translation that doesn't read very well. And then it's obvious that it doesn't read very well and just takes that much extra work to go and turn it into something that's not horribly bland in English too, which, you know, I think when you're bored with a show, it comes out in the subtitles even more than if you dislike a show. Because at least when you dislike a show, you have passion about it, right? It might be negative passion, but it's still passion. It still makes your brain think. And then when a show just bores you to tears and your brain shuts down, it's impossible. It's really difficult to really work through it and do the translation that way. So, well, I mean, I try very much and avoid giving a show that a translator dislikes to, you know, making them work on it, because obviously it's not going to be as good quality if that happens. But some shows are just bad, and, you know, a job's a job, so, you know, we get through them. Yeah. I don't think we've worked on too many of those. It was really everybody. Actually, I have an editor. One of my editors, one of the things that makes her so great is that she loves everything. she'll find the good part. She'll find the good part of any kind of show, and that way, you know, I know that at least there's someone who can be inspired when working on it. So if there's a show that's really bad, I usually give it to her. I kind of feel bad about that.
Well, final question from Cody Shea. He asks, have you had any issues where you translated something and the Japanese have been unhappy and forced you to change it, even if their change wasn't accurate? You kind of talked about this a little bit, but
You know, I have been sort of blessed in terms of this sort of thing, where this has rarely happened with me and my translations. And I think, and I hear about these stories from other translators all the time about how the Japanese companies will come back and be like, no, you have to translate this way, this way, this way. And that really doesn't happen to me very often at all. Sometimes, you know, I'll often have approvals will come back and say, no, you need to do it this way. But that usually those are things which are actually perfectly valid concerns, or they'll suggest something and I'll suggest something that's maybe a little bit, you know, more grammatical than what they suggested, and it works out. I think the difference between my experience and other people in the history is that I'm here in Japan and I meet these people face to face. And when they have to look you in the eye and go, no, do it this way, and then I go, well, actually, this is a better solution. These people who are making these approvals are actually not really very high up, and they're usually going to defer to the translator if you're sitting there in the room with them. That's the difference. Right. And so I thankfully, have often won these arguments. Let's put it that way. Now, there are some cases where I don't really get to sit in the room where the licensor is sort of overall. I think I'll say this. Okay, let me give you one story of where I think was a little bit unfortunate. But we handled the translation for Card Fight Vanguard. If you're familiar with that show, actually, the show has been surprisingly more solid than I thought it was, and it's getting a second year. So everybody, watch Card Fight Vanguard; it's awesome. Anyway, Bushiroad, the card game company, not the anime company, but the card game company, checks the scripts for that our stuff very carefully because they have to make sure that all the spelling of the card names is very correct. And there was a time in the beginning when we were first starting out that they were also re-editing our scripts in ways which are not very good. And I sort of would push back on that a little bit. There was one time specifically where they changed all the we had a couple of dams in the script, D-A-M-N, and they changed them all to dang, D-A-N-G, because they were afraid of the ratings concerns with the word damn. And I did push back against that. I said, look, you know, even I'm not sure what the actual, you know, this show is not going to be aired for under 9 year olds in a, even if that is the market in Japan and it's online and, you know, we can use the word damn, and having them all say dang is just extraordinarily it just reads really, really wonkily. And there was sort of a back and forth, and what actually ended up happening with that is that over time their checker got used to the translator, and their translator got used to, you know, the types of things that the checker was concerned about at Bushiroad. And nowadays, pretty much the only things that come back that we need to change are the spellings of new card names that we can only guess. And that's about it. And so, you know, it worked out in the end. And, you know, the translation is kiddier, definitely, than a lot of the other simulcast translations. But you know what? It is Card Fight Vanguard. It is a show like Yu-Gi-Oh! And kids shows. And it's not inappropriate. And so, you know, we worked it out. And that's the kind of thing that happens. I've never had a situation, thankfully, where the licensor has demanded something that I was just wrong, and I said this is stupid, and was very upset about that. It's never happened, and I'm sort of blessed that this never happened.
Okay, all right. Well, all very interesting. That about wraps it up. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting. That was really interesting. And Godspeed with your next endeavor.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And I'll hopefully, you know, be around to translate anime and make sure anime is there in the West and with good English subtitles and the localization in the future for a long time. That's my plan. So thanks a lot for having me on. And when I have more information about my project, you know, we can talk again.
Absolutely. All right. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Sam for coming on by. Theme song is Bucharest by the band The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. While you're there, leave us a rating, a little review. We would really appreciate that. And we will see you all next week.